when I would go to these sales calls that come sell my home, we're getting divorced, I would observe the couple and they're talking and Bruce, and they're like the eye rolling, the mumbling and behind each other's mm-hmm. back. And it's just like, but we don't communicate. We never communicate. I'm thinking to myself, but you really are, but you just are doing it in the wrong way. Yeah. If you could,
it's
just
what they're communicating. Me. Yeah.
100%.
The body language.
Also. And I would like, I'm not a therapist, but I could pick on these little things. And I'm like, they are totally communicating, but they're not doing it in the right way.
Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy. Hello, listeners. We have just a lovely interview we just completed. And Judy, tell folks the title of this podcast.
It is Joy Across Cultural Differences, an interview with Nina Kako and Roger Gerton.
And they are a couple from, they live in Toronto, mm-hmm. In Canada. And they're just a delight to talk to.
They are. They are adorable.
And there was a lot of fun.
We were on their podcast, I will say.
A few weeks ago, and we had fun with them, and we invited them.
We just had a great time. They're so energetic and fun and loving and just, well, you'll hear.
You'll hear, yes. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. That'll be great. Before we do that, let's put in a couple of words for some really exciting things that have been happening. Mm-hmm. I'm still crowing about the number one bestseller status that we achieved for a couple of days. On my book, the title of which is...
It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
Yes, and what I'm putting in a big plug for now, in addition to people going and buying the book, is to review it. We want to get some reviews up on Amazon, folks. Sorry mm-hmm. about that for those of you who don't like Amazon, mm-hmm. but that's where we need to get some reviews.
We need the reviews. So.
And if you sign up for my newsletter, here's another plug. If you go to our podcast website, ctn7.com, 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 go there and you will see a box magically appear that will let you sign up for my newsletter. And I have some instructions in there about how to go about doing a review. And if you read through to the end of the newsletter, how many people will really do that? I don't know yet, but we'll find out.
Know.
But you guys, listeners to our podcast, you get to hear this first. If you submit a question for us to use on one of our podcasts, you know, we often do listener questions. We didn't happen to do one with Nino and Roger because they're not therapists.
Right.
But we often do when we have like therapists or other kinds of subject matter experts. And we're looking for more listener questions. The first 3 people that submit us, you know, questions that we can use, I will send you a code for a free download of the audiobook version of It's Not About Communication, which is darn good if you ask me. Mm-hmm. I did the narration myself, mm-hmm. and you can get it for free. And you know, I was trying to look up how much you'd have to pay for it if you bought it, and I couldn't figure it out because Amazon is saying, well, if you join Audible, you can listen for free, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, it's like $20 worth of audiobook or something like that.
Yeah.
So
what a deal. Such a deal.
So send us a question, you know, stuff, and it could be on any sort of topic related to any aspect of couples relationships. Mm-hmm. And we are always we always enjoy getting those, and they often stimulate great conversations on our podcast.
Right.
And we also want you to rate and subscribe to this podcast itself and tell your friends and all that kind of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we need to say before we go to our interview?
I think that says it all.
So folks, you will hear Judy introducing our guests today, and then we will see you on the other side.
Our guests today are Nina Kako and Roger Gerton. Roger and Nina are a married couple, hosts of the Head Over Heels Show podcast. Although Nina and Roger had quite different upbringings, they both feared for their lives on more than one occasion. Nina was born and raised in Baghdad, Iraq, where she lived through the Iran War, Gulf War, and some of the Desert Storm War until her family fled to safety in Turkey. Her family lived in a military tent at a refugee camp for 3 years before arriving in Canada. When Nina arrived in Canada, she was 18 and didn't speak any English, but as Roger can attest, she learned fast. The couple met 3 years after Nina arrived in Ottawa. Roger was born and raised in Ottawa, but his life growing up wasn't that much different than Nina's. His war was living in an unsafe neighborhood. Drugs and alcohol were the norm in his neighborhood. He needed to grow up fast to be able to protect himself from that environment. Although Nina and Roger come from totally different backgrounds, they quickly found out that they both had the same goals and dreams for their future. As Nina has said, "I knew he was the one from the first moment I laid eyes on him." Eventually, they moved to Toronto and got married 7 years into their relationship. They have two kids and have now been together for 23 years. Nina and Roger, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you. What an introduction.
That's right. That was so good. I loved it.
You nailed it. Wow, I can't even imagine what a background like both of yours, you know, does to a person. You know, we'll get into that a little bit, but I just want to say we were guests on your podcast, so we enjoyed being guests on your podcast. How did you two get into podcasting?
You know, it's been something we've been talking about for a while, and not necessarily podcasting, but kind of like, you know, I think we have a spectacular relationship where we have fun, we enjoy each other's company, and other people see it. And we just thought, you know what? I know other people can have this, you know, if they just put a little bit of time and effort or whatever and, you know, want it and enjoy it, they can have it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're both in real estate. So we sell homes, and most of the time, for some reason, we get couples that are splitting up that they're selling their homes. And for 17 years, Raj and I always wondered, what if they had just put a little effort maybe into different areas of their marriage or the relationship? What if that would work? So we thought, you know what, let's just share our experiences for past, you know, 25 years that we've been together with our friends and our listeners and our audience and see if that helps. And you know what, it's been helping. It's been 3 years and we've got such a great feedback, and we knew we were on the right track when we started this.
You two have great energy. That was one of the things that we really liked about you when we were started looking at your podcast. You two do have great energy. So
yeah. We're still trying to convey that energy on our podcast. I know we do it in real life and on our live videos that we do and stuff, but no, it's tough. It's tough just talking to each other.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, but it comes through, and that's what we've enjoyed about listening to your podcast. You know, the bio, and of course you gave us that information, the differences in your backgrounds is a tricky thing to bridge sometimes. And I'm wondering, you know, what are some of the obstacles you faced early on, and how did you get past those?
Well, for me particularly, it was the cultural difference. You know, like I grew up, I mean, it wasn't that much of a, because we grew up Catholic, Christian Catholic. So that was an easy part. But the fact that, you know, I come from Middle East and he's, you know, from the Western world, it's a huge gap in terms of cultures. And my family was a little worried at the beginning. We're like, is he going to fit in? Is this going to last? Is this going to be, you know, because for us, marriage is like, you know, forever. And that's what I grew up believing. So they didn't want that to be a problem. So
they thought, you know, marrying a Canadian or white guy, you know, we'd divorce, or there'd be just a totally different, I don't know, part of life. I don't know I'm looking for, but we even had issues with, not issues, but kind of when we went to go see her priest, he was an Iraqi priest and stuff. And he had asked for me to go back to my church and ask for some paperwork for my priest to say that I've never been married or engaged. And I had never been married before. Uh-huh. So I don't know if that's the norm or whatever. So I went back to where I got baptized and all that stuff. And I asked the priest, I said, I need a form to say that I've never been married or engaged. And he kind of giggled a little bit and he said, you know what? I can give you something to say you've never been married, but how the heck am I going to know if you ever gave a girl a ring? You know,
yeah.
Why would he ask that? But it was one of those things. He saw me as the white guy, and you know, I'm sure they do this all the time.
but what happened was my family quickly got to know him and fell in love with him. And all the differences sort of, you know, went out the window.
It's just not the love.
You're a funny dude.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the cultural differences, or some of the things that maybe things expectations you had, Nina, that Roger might not have picked up on or understood because of the culture you were coming
from? Yes, absolutely. So for example, Roger's parents got married when he was 22. So they lived common law their entire life. So to them, marriage was not a big deal, right? Mm. My culture, marriage is the first thing you do when you start dating somebody. That was what we were taught. Now, I came here when I was 18. So I was just learning most of my adulthood then. So I was like, wait a minute, I got this culture, okay, down packed, but there's a whole new world out there that I need to explore and learn. And that's what I did with Roger. And I learned, I was like, you know, it's not that far apart, to be honest. At the end of the day, what both cultures want is to have love, kind relationship. And when I explained that to my parents, they understood it right away. It was like, you know what? There's no problem in who I'm dating as long as that person respects and loves me for who I am. And I think that was the hurdle, because they didn't understand that. They were like, well, it's a different culture. What if he doesn't respect you, he leaves you? It was that kind of thing. But when I explained to them that the cultural difference is really not big of a deal, and what it matters is our love, you know, they accepted him right away. And his family accepted me from day one. So it was not a big shock in both families, to be honest.
Well, you know, it's funny because my parents got married on their 25th anniversary. I was legal to drink at their wedding. So when I met Nina, when I met Nina, she was, we're about a month or so into the relationship, and she already started talking about marriage. I'm like, oh, take it easy.
How old were you at the time, Roger?
So he was 24 and I was 21.
Yeah.
That's what we met.
Around that time. So she was talking about marriage, but I knew that she was kind of half-heartedly kidding or just kind of, planning that kind of stuff.
I wanted commitment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were together 6 years before we got married, and it wasn't something that I jumped up and said, you know, oh, I have to marry you. It was just like, I'm enjoying my time with you. Just, you know, just like my mom and dad, they were boyfriend and girlfriend forever. I used to call my mom and say, where's your boyfriend? I mean, for talking about my dad. So, I mean, that was one thing. And then I guess over the years, you know, getting to know her parents and stuff like that, they got to know me as a person as opposed to, you know, the white guy.
The culture, culture difference, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, that would be the only thing. I mean, I did hear from members of my family saying, oh, she's super nice. You know, she's not Canadian, but, you know, it's okay. She's Middle Eastern, but it's okay. Like, you know what I mean? But it's just one of those things. You know, you talk to older people and they're just set in their ways. It's not a racism thing. It's not a thing like that. It's just, they know what they know. And then, you know, they kind of verbalize it and it comes out as sounding racist, but it's just, that's what
they also want. From both sides, they wanted us to be happy in the long run as well. So they hadn't seen that part from your family or my family. They hadn't seen like an outsider marrying their child. How would that be? So once they saw us together, they saw the energy that we had. They knew we were legit and this stuff. Like I told you guys, I knew I was going to marry him. It was going to be forever the minute I saw him. It was not, I didn't make that up. I told him, you're going to be my husband forever. He starts laughing, you know?
So I tried to open up a car door.
What was it about him?
I don't know. I can't put my hand, like I think about it that moment all the time, but it was that moment I walked into that club and I looked at him and I was like, yep. The first thing I saw, it was his dance moves. I'm a huge fan of dance and I love dancing and I love having fun. And I saw this man, this beautiful man dancing and having fun. I'm like, yep. That's for me, you know, right away. I felt it, but I was told I was crazy. But here we are 25 years later. I guess I wasn't crazy.
Yeah. No, that is interesting. You know, I when you were talking about, you know, the dealing with like old family members or whatever, and, you know, the assumptions people make just based on some particular thing, like what your nationality is or what your race is or whatever, you know, whatever, however people lump people together. And the solution to all of that, and you hear this in lots of different contexts, the solution to all that seems to be when you actually get to know a real live human being who is from whatever category you think you understand, you come to discover that nobody fits perfectly in any category. They're all just, you know, we lump people together for all kinds of good evolutionary reasons, but it's never strictly accurate. And when you actually get to know a real live person, a lot of that stuff can break down. And that's, you know, that's how it sounds like that's what was happening with your families, that sense of each, you know, each of your families worried about what they're worried about based on the category that you come from. And then realizing when they actually got to know you as human beings, it's like, well, the categories really don't matter when you're actually talking to a real live person.
Absolutely. And, you know, like, that's very true, because you, when you're sort of stuck inside a box your whole life, you don't know what's out, like, what you don't know what's outside of it, because all you think is inside that box. But I explored the culture, the beauty of you know, the Western world. I'm like, there's a lot more to these people than just what everybody say. Yeah. And it's true, because at the end of the day, we're all human. We all are the same. Doesn't matter what culture, what color, where you're from. It just, we proved that is to be the case.
Well, I think you did a good job over the years of choosing what part of your culture you want to keep and what things you want to let go. And the same thing as the type of my culture, what you want to keep and what you want to adapt to and all that stuff.
Right.
You know, so it was a, you know, it was a good way of just kind of compromising and saying this, no, not necessarily compromising, just doing the stuff you like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And some of it might be part of your culture. Some of it might be my culture, whatever it is. Even her parents, like you look at her parents and right away, they're the very stereotypical looking Middle Eastern parents. You know, like you look at them, you know, little, don't say much, blah, 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 but you get to know them. And, you know, you see that they're no different than everybody else. They're very playful. They're, you know, they joke around. They, you know, they look a certain way. And you might think, oh, you know, they're going to be very strict or whatever. I mean, her dad was pretty strict, but I used that in a playful way. Like every time I'm at her place, if Nina's giving me attitude or whatever, I would just walk over to the kitchen sink and start doing dishes. And her dad would lose it on her. Like, what the heck are you doing? Why is he doing dishes?
Why is your husband doing dishes? You should be, I'm like, daddy. Stop it.
But I would just do it. I would just do it to give her, so he can give her shit. You know what I mean? So
I was like, don't spoil. But in all honesty, my parents fell in love with him right away. And they took him as their own son and they never looked back. So again, they got to know who he was, and that's all that mattered.
I'm curious about your kids, because you have kids. And of course, they are the product of that sort of cross-cultural relationship. And I wonder, you know, how do they navigate that? How do they think of themselves, and how does that work out, you know, where you live in Toronto? I'll mention, by the way, for the benefit of our listeners, I think I mentioned this when we were on your podcast, I'm a graduate of the University of Toronto. My undergraduate degree was there. So I'm familiar with Toronto from having, I grew up in Buffalo, New York, and of course that's close. Folks from Toronto and Buffalo know that. I'm sort of picturing Toronto, but yeah, how do your kids navigate that?
I think we're lucky that Toronto is very, very multicultural. And
yes, indeed.
As a kid, especially my daughter, Nina spoke to her in her language the whole time. So I was at work and Nina would be at home with her, and just kind of everything they would do, they would say, talk to in Nina's language. It was to the point where I couldn't communicate with my daughter. My daughter would come and try and say something to me, but it was in her language. I would know some things, but a lot of it I don't know. So I don't know what she thought when she was a baby, that she probably just thought her dad was completely illiterate because I couldn't really communicate.
But that was for the first 3 years of their life, because she went to school and she totally forgot about everything I taught her in my language. So she spoke English. How they navigate the you know, they love the fact that they tell people they're half French and half Iraqi. And they're like, they just love it. They're proud of it. You know, they're mixed. They're mixed with two different cultures and they love it. They love both cultures and they're both really eager to learn both cultures, which I really love about it.
Yeah. I think they adapted more to the Canadian life because, I mean, they're born here and so are most of their friends. So it's just kind of, it's normal, I guess, just to adapt to the Canadian life. But they love a lot of they love going to Assyrian weddings. They love the food. They love, you know, visiting their cousins and all that stuff. So it's, you know, they adapt a little bit to both.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of Canada, you don't think of drugs and alcoholism and crime, but you, Roger, the way you describe your upbringing, it was very much filled with that. You want to talk?
We lived in the, what we call Ontario housing. You know, it, projects, that kind of stuff. So it was a rough upbringing. I used to always joke and say that, you know, my parents used to, most parents would tell their kids, you know, when the street lights come on, it's time to come home, you know, as a curfew. Mm-hmm. My dad used to tell me, when the prostitutes come out, you can come home. Because our street was a street like known in Ottawa, It was called Murray Street. That's where we lived on. And Murray is known for just kind of like all the prostitute and the homeless and all that kind of stuff to hang out. It was right downtown. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's also the capital, right? Ottawa?
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. I mean, I think every city's got these kind of neighborhoods. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's, it, I didn't see it as dangerous as a kid because all my friends were my friends. And yeah, of course, mm-hmm. later on in life when most of them are in jail or whatever, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe it was a little dangerous, but it wasn't something that bothered me. I was kind of part of those groups, but not part of those groups. You know, I grew up with them.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But look at you where you are today. And that's why we connected when you first met, because I grew up, I thought, you know, growing up in a war-torn country was normal. It was something normal. Yeah. Everybody goes through it. Not until I came to Canada and I saw the freedom and the safety and the security. I'm like, dude, I mean, we were robbed. I was robbed of my teenage years, of my childhood years, because I had to dodge a bullet my entire 15 years in that country. Now, you know what I mean? And he told me his story. And I think that's another reason why we connected on such a deep level. Yeah. And we promise each other that we're going to have the best life together, because we went through all that growing up. We're like, okay, now it's our turn to shine. Our 20s were the best years of my life and his life. Mm-hmm. Our 30s, we raised children. And now in our 40s, we're just having a blast with our teenagers and just like loving every moment of our life because of what we've seen growing
up.
Sure. It's one of those things. When we first talked about getting married, we were together quite a few years, and you know, I was telling you, I don't want to grow up, and that was my excuse for marriage, and that was my excuse for not wanting kids. I just didn't want to grow up. So, you know, after we decided to do this, I said, okay, well, you know, the stereotype, everybody's like, oh, you know, I don't have fun, I'm married, or I don't have sex with my wife because I'm married, and, you know, all these stereotypes everybody brought up. I told Nina, I said, I don't want that. I don't want to be that stereotype. So we kind of agreed on a few things. And one of my things was, I want to agree that we always have fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always trying to have fun, because if you're not having fun, then you're depressed and pissed off and not enjoying life. So this way here, you know, we've followed through with that pretty much our whole life. I mean, obviously we've had some times in our life when kids were first born and all that stuff, it was a lot of work, not as much fun, but we still enjoyed ourselves. You know,
absolutely.
I think we've still found ways to enjoy ourselves and do it. Now we're doing a heck of a lot more. We enjoy ourselves, you know, on a weekly basis. We always make sure we include a lot of fun in our lives. So it's just,
it's funny. We were on a TikTok live last week. We do a lot of those lives on our social media, and someone asked us, like, someone who has been, you know, trolling, they're like, you guys just love being teenagers. Like, you enjoy doing this stuff. You're like teenagers. What's wrong with you? And I turned back and I said, you know what? Yes, we are teenagers, because we were robbed of our teenage years. I had to deal with dodging the bullet my whole teenage years and having to save my parents on my back for 3 years. He had to legit dodge the bullets in his neighborhood. And we didn't live the way we wanted to live as teenagers. So yes, we are enjoying our life now. Mm. Because we committed to doing that. So if that's what you see, then that's what it is.
I got one thing that I say all the time. You don't stop having fun because you're old. Yeah. You get old because you stop having fun.
Right.
on. Yes, absolutely.
So Nina, I wanted to ask you, because of how you grew up, and like you said, with the war, and you didn't really get to have those teenage years, do you find when in your marriage, some of the little problems don't seem as big because you've, you know, had life and death situations?
So, to, like every other couple, at the beginning it was a little rough back in, you know, often it was more than, you know, not. And we were trying to navigate through, trying to understand. But it's been years since we've had a real, real argument, because we're like, you know what? We've seen so much worse in our life. These are just little things that we can get over. So yes, I don't see big deal in a lot of things in our marriage now, because I'm like, been there, done that. This is just a piece of cake for us now.
We definitely pick our battles.
Yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And the makeup start is the best part of the fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just commenting on that in one of my newsletters. Actually. Uh-huh. I'm curious. You know, the two of you work together also, right? You said you do real estate together.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, because I've worked with, you know, lots of couples where they do that. And of course, recognizing I'm a couples therapist, they come to see me because they're having problems. You know, they don't come to see me just to tell me how wonderful everything is. So I get folks who are having difficulties. But a lot of times, if they're in business together, it can be really, really hard. And I'm wondering, how do you manage to do that? How do you work out sort of the, you know, the power issues involved in being in business together?
Well, I think, you know, we went through a lot of, you know, that when you hear that saying, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians, you know, you're butting heads, you do this, you're not doing this enough, I'm not doing this enough, blah, blah, blah. But I think what would make it work is just kind of choosing our roles. You know what I mean? You're in charge of this stuff and I'm in charge of everything else, or this stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, that way we're not butting heads unless, you know, she didn't do her part and it messes up my side. That might be the only things that we kind of argue about, but it's not so much the you know, who's more powerful.
Well, at the beginning, who's in charge. I would say at the beginning, the first few years, there's a lot of competition between us.
Yeah,
right?
That's what it was. Yeah.
You're not doing enough, or it was back and forth. You should be doing more, you should be doing less. So it was like, we had that until we came to understand. It was like, okay, business is not going to get into our, like, nothing else got in between us. Yeah. Business is not going to be that to break us apart. So we decided, you know what? You do that. You do this part of this business and I'll do this part of the business. That way we both can feel good and accomplish of what we're doing and not have to compete with each other or tell each other what to do. Yeah, exactly. Or put the other one down for not doing enough. So it is extremely difficult, but it takes a lot of effort from both ends to say, you know what? I respect you. I love you. You're doing amazing at whatever you're doing, and vice versa. It took a while for us together, but we did it. Yep. So I think that's important for couples that work together to realize that, you know,
you're touching on one of my favorite topics, actually, which is that idea that what you're talking about, or one way of describing what you're talking about, is you're putting the relationship ahead of how you're doing the relationship. You know what I mean?
Right.
In other words, you're working together, you're doing all these things together, and you're even the things about having fun. It's all in the service of being dedicated to loving each other, to actively loving each other. And that takes precedence over all the details of how you do things. So if you're having a disagreement, because two human beings are going to have disagreements occasionally, it doesn't turn into a death match. You know, it turns into, we're not going to let this, you said it, you know, it was interesting. We're not going to let these business differences threaten our relationship.
Yeah.
And when you privilege that, a lot of other stuff, then you work it out. It doesn't feel like winning and losing. I also wanted to ask you about something. This is one of the main reasons that we contacted you in the first place, and we ended up on your podcast, and here you are on ours, is when I heard you on a podcast, I know we mentioned this when you were interviewing us too, I heard you on a podcast say, you know, so many couples think they're having communications problem, but it's really not about communication, it's about competition. And our listeners will know, I just published a book called It's Not About Communication. So when I heard you say that, I got all excited and said, oh, I said to Judy, we got to get these people on our show. So I want to ask you about that. You know, can you talk about that idea when you recognize, no, it's not about communication, it's more about competition that gets people into trouble?
Well, that's the beginning of our a career in real estate. I mean, we were definitely competing against each other. We were definitely, you know, you're not doing enough, I'm doing more than you, and all that kind of stuff. And it obviously put us in like a bad place. We're, you know, arguing all the time, and we do it in everything. In everything we do, we tend to compete with each other. So we notice these things, and we realize, okay, well, we gotta find a way to work on
communicate
that.
In a better way.
Yeah.
But also I actually will give the credit, all of the credit to our career in real estate. And I said a little bit about it earlier. What happened for me personally is when I would go to these sales calls that come sell my home, we're getting divorced, I would observe the couple and they're talking and Bruce, and they're like the eye rolling, the mumbling and behind each other's back. And it was just like, but we don't communicate. We never communicate. I'm thinking to myself, but you really are, but you just are doing it in the wrong way. Yeah. If you could,
it's
just
what they're communicating. Yeah.
100%.
The body language.
And I was like, I'm not a therapist, but I could pick on these little things. And I'm like, they are totally communicating, but they're not doing it in the right way. If they could just understand or talk to someone to tell them that this is what you're doing wrong, which is over communicating in the wrong way, they would understand. That would probably stop that. Yeah. And that would probably end this whole, I wouldn't sell their home. You know, a lot of times I'd walk in, I'd be like, I really want you guys to get back together because you have such a good energy. You're such a good couple. Like, I don't want your commission. I don't want to sell your house. It was, and I think that's where this podcast sort of stemmed from, of years of doing this work with these couples. And I'm like, I got to do this. I got to show more people that there's more to than just getting, okay, let's throw in the towel. Let's just, you know, if they could just put in some effort. And that's where that came from, Bruce. I really find a lot of couples are communicating the wrong way.
Yeah.
So that's so not an you issue. Probably see you when you go show houses and you see a lot of couples over the years, and I'm sure you've seen the different dynamics about couples. Do you ever think to yourself, they're going to split up in a few years by the way that they handle things?
Yep. I call it a lot of times, and Roger look at me is like, yep. And it's true because, and you know what else? I learned not to do a lot of things from those couples. So if I see there's a little bit of tension there, I'm like, look what they're doing. We're going to avoid that. Mm-hmm. We're going to avoid that in our marriage. So for me, it always been, my passion has always been my marriage and my children. A lot of people are always looking for passion, their passion in life, and they're looking outside of who they are. If they would just look inside and around them, they'll see they have so much passion in everything that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's mine. And going back to real estate, We have a great career, but I could have had a way better if I had continued the road. But that would have meant I would have to pay the price in my marriage. Mm. What I saw in a lot of those big time high producers, top producers that were making a lot of money in real estate, they were on their second or third marriage. Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, do I want to be up on that stage talking about my amazing career and yet fail my marriage? To me, it was not an option. My marriage was always number one. And that was another reason I learned from
you know, we look at, let's say, like in Europe, you know, I find that they don't live to work, they work to live. And that's kind of like what Nina and I did. We started off building these big teams and working really hard in real estate and being separate most of the time, even though we're working together. And, you know, I could easily see us drifting apart.
Oh yeah, I could do too.
And it wasn't only that. It was like, you know, if we had a birthday party for one of us, it was all our real estate friends. It was all, you know, everything we did was all real estate people.
It's all about business.
So I was like, I don't want my life to all be this. I want it to be, you know, a mixture of everything. I want our life to have funds outside of real estate, to have, you know, activities outside of real estate and all that stuff. So we built our business in a way that, you know, I don't need 150 listings. You know, I'm happy with 10 and you know, giving them the best service I possibly can, as opposed to a little bit of service to 150 people. You know, so it was just one of those things that we said, okay, I don't want to manage a whole bunch of people. I just want to do my job, enjoy it, and enjoy the life I have with my wife. You know?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, I guess it's what you choose. Well, it's you're privileging the relationship over a lot of other things, which is why you can actually have fun. And you know, I describe it in when I talk about there's stability and there's intimacy. And you're talking about ways of keeping intimacy alive because you're giving you're letting yourself have that energy. And there are choices you have to make to do that. And that's what you're each talking about.
You know, I said at the beginning before when we were talking about, you know, when we get married, the stereotype of people, you know, I don't have sex anymore because I'm married, all this stuff. They convince themselves their whole lives that they don't like their wives, that they're trying to escape their wives. And, you know, it's torture being married and you'd rather be single and all that kind of stuff. I avoided doing that. Like I'll never trash talk Nina, even behind her back. Like if there's nobody there, I might joke and say something, blah, 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 but I'm not sitting there putting you down. I'm not convincing myself that I don't want to be around you. I'm not convincing myself that I don't like you.
And that's one of the things I love about you from day one is the respect aspect of our relationship. It's extremely important to me. And if that wasn't there, we wouldn't have one. We wouldn't have this relationship.
Yeah.
So respect to me is the most important thing, whether it's in front of me or behind my back. And the same thing with him. I always have him on a pedestal no matter what, because he is my other half. So if I'm talking trash down him or rolling my eyes on him when he's not around, I'm doing that to myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I love myself immensely.
That's interesting. Yeah. That was in my newsletter. I've started a newsletter and I'm on my fourth issue is going out today. The first one, the very first tip I put in my first newsletter was honor your partner in public and private. That it's Absolutely. All about honoring. You never want to say things that would put them down, whether it's publicly or privately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's it. I'm working for you. That's it. I'm writing for your newsletter.
You are, totally.
You'd be a guest blogger. There you go.
That's it.
I would love that.
But, like, you know, a lot of people, especially men, they'll think, and it's something I thought for many, many years at the beginning of our relationship, you know, to show your love or show your affection is demasculating. It's, you're not a real man and everything. And, like, coming from the neighborhood I came from, I had to be as masculine and as manly as possible. And then over the years, I don't know, I just kind of gave up on that. I said, you know what, I can show her how much I love her. I mean, she's gorgeous and I'm showing her off. I'm happy doing it. And by doing that over the years, just continuously showing her that I love her and kind of like yelling it out to the world. And nowadays by posting something on Instagram and all that kind of stuff, she loves it. I find that she like eats that stuff up and she gives it back to me to the point where now we're 26 years together and I'm infatuated with her. I'm starting to think that I should go to some sort of AA thing because I think I'm addicted to Nina. I don't know what it is. And I'm not at all, I don't feel at all demasculated at all. And I don't think other people see me that way. But if they do, it's their problem.
I think it was all the thought in your head, you know what I mean? That's what you were telling yourself before. Now that you know it's not true, it kind of gone, sort of left you.
Yeah, there you go.
Which I love.
The only thing, you know, as long as you're confident in your masculinity, and you know, Nina obviously is. So really, that's all that matters.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's good fun. We enjoy our life. We're happy to be living it, and you know, people look at it as, you know, crazy, or some people look at it as amazing. Some people look at it as you know, they think it's fake or whatever it is.
You can't make everybody happy. As long as we're happy, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think you two are lucky. You know, it's rare that so many couples find that level of mutual respect and love and fun and, you know, everything that you two have going on.
A nice way to wrap up, because that's really why we wanted to have you on our podcast, because that's what our podcast is about in a lot of ways. And so it's really been great having you on. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, we told you it would be fun. They were an adorable couple, and it was just so much fun having them and speaking to them again.
I'm laughing because you're calling them an adorable couple, and I'm thinking, they're in their 40s. They're not kids.
I know they're not kids.
To us, they're kids.
But they are adorable.
They are adorable. And actually, they were even talking about the fact that, you know, some of their TikTok viewers, you know, will say, you're acting like teenagers. And Nina was saying, yeah we are.
Yeah.
And because they, in their background, as you heard, they didn't have a chance to really be teenagers the way a lot of folks can when they're living in a safe place. And neither one of them was growing up in safe circumstances. So we had a lot of fun with that. Want to put in another plug now to do reviews of the book. If you are one of those wonderful people who bought the book and made it a number one bestseller.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. And what I'm asking, imploring, shamelessly begging, whatever you want to say, is that you please do a review on Amazon. It's easy to do. You go to the page on Amazon, you're all set. If you sign up for my newsletter, I have easy instructions on exactly how to do that. Gee, how might someone sign up for my newsletter, Judy?
That's a good question. How might somebody sign up for your newsletter?
I'm happy to tell you. All they have to do is go to our website, ctn7.com. That's the number 7, ctn7, couples therapy, ctn7.com. Mm-hmm. And they will see a box magically appear before their very eyes saying, click here to sign up for, I think it says, Dr. Chalmers newsletter. So please do that. You'll get the newsletter. I'm sending it out about every other week, roughly. So it's, you know, 2 or 3 times a month sort of time frame. No spam, not providing your email address to anybody else at all. I hope you'll enjoy it. And among other things there, you'll have instructions on exactly how to do a review. of the book, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong. By the way, I had another book that came out a few years ago.
Yes,
that's,
you did.
It's still good, it turns out.
It is, Reigniting the Spark.
Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. It was, this the very idea of Reigniting the Spark left you breathless there.
It did, it did.
Just the thought of it. Don't know what happened there, folks, but here we are. So anyway, yeah, that book is also available, readily available anywhere books are sold. And yeah, you can do reviews on that one too. That one has a bunch of reviews. I'm always looking for more.
Yeah, that's really great. Good reviews.
Yes, so, indeed.
Yes. And well, if you're at our website, there are lots of things you can do. One is you can buy our merch. We have beautiful mugs and t-shirts and tote bags that have our logo and our motto.
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. Ooh, we said it together.
And you can also write us questions that we can answer on the air, or you can sign up to be a guest on our show, or you can make suggestions for guests on our show. All those things.
And in terms of signing up to be a guest, you can even schedule your interview with us. Uh-huh. If you go to our Calendly link there. That's how people do it these days, by golly. And that's what we're doing too.
That's what they do.
So I guess that is what we need to say.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. So until next time.
Remember, be kind.
Don't panic.
And have faith.